You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
This Green Bay Packers podcast is brought to you by Mayfield Sports Marketing, our official sports marketing agent for player appearances. To book a Packers player for your next event, go to PackersTalk.com and click on player appearances.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hit.
Fast tempo, we got to bring some energy and some life to this team, this crowd, all right? Green left, 97, stretch, quick, the right stretch. Green, I get out.
Rodgers shotgun gets the snap. Rodgers looking, throws the ball.
There we go.
14-yard touchdown pass.
Give me east right block, me right on the outside. Wide left, face 396, bag, the end, deep puck. Is that long enough for you?
All GreenBayPackers.com brings you
What's up, Packers fans? Welcome to No Huddle Radio on Packers Talk Radio Network. This podcast is brought to you by our good friends at Mayfield Sports Marketing. I am Marcus Ebersole, and joining me tonight, Jason Perrone and Chris Burke. Guys, how are you doing?
I've got the blues. I'm actually starting to come down with a little bit of a cold, and I'm going to blame it on last night's game, 100%. But we'll talk about that in a minute.
Going into this podcast, it almost feels like a funeral. But, you know, keep calm and carry on, right? Not quite. I'm the panic button staring me right in the face, and I've mashed it down several times.
Well, obviously, both of you are not only referring to the loss against the Chicago Bears last night, you're also referring to the loss of Aaron Rodgers, which will be for at least three games from the looks of things. Suffered a fractured collarbone. Not quite sure on the extent of it, whether it was a full break, just a small fracture, whatever the case may be. Anytime a quarterback suffers a collarbone injury, it is a significant injury, and that's what Rodgers said today on his radio show with Jason Wilde. Now with Seneca Wallace, you know, obviously this is a different team. It's, you know, no longer a team that's going to outscore you, you know, win a shootout in the 30s. The defense is going to have to step up. You know, Eddie Lacy in the run game, that was a kind of welcome addition to the team this year, and now it's going to be the crutch that the offense is forced to lean on to move the ball up and down the field. It worked last night. They still weren't able to come up with the win. Jason, I guess I'll start with you. Do you think Seneca Wallace is the guy they stick with? Do you think they'll bring in Matt Flynn, maybe promote Scott Tolzien? What do you think?
I think they're going to stick with Wallace. It's just, you know, it's kind of what they do. They like their guys in-house. Even though Wallace wasn't with the team during OTAs or training camp, he's been with them since the beginning of the season. And, you know, we've heard all the cliches from McCarthy. We don't want to go backwards. We don't want to, you know, look at Matt Flynn. And I think the fact that Flynn has been released three different times in the last year and twice by teams that aren't, frankly, very good, probably says something more than maybe what we know on the surface. So while, yes, he was an adequate backup 2 years ago and even came in and won a game in place of Aaron Rodgers, who was being rested for the playoff run, that was then, this is now. And it's tough to kind of get behind it, the whole situation, because of how Wallace played last night. But who knows what kind of quarterback he can become with more time in practice with the first team, with more game reps, and also going into this game at Philadelphia, assuming he's the starter, knowing, hey, I'm going to be the starter, I know I'm the number one. You go into that with that mindset. I think it's kind of tough sometimes. It's like a pinch hitter in baseball. You get up cold and grab your bat and get on the on deck circle, and you know, it's a wonder that any of those guys ever even get a hit, let alone come through in the pinch, kind of, no pun intended, I guess.
Right, yeah, that's actually a good analogy, Jason, I think. You know, a pinch hitter coming in cold, not expecting really to, you know, jump into that situation. By no means was Seneca Wallace planning on playing yesterday. Now, obviously, you want your backup quarterback to be prepared for anything, you know, if something were to happen to the starting quarterback, but with a week of preparation, and I know it's kind of hard to imagine it now because Wallace didn't play well last night. The offense struggled to move the ball, you know, for much of that second half. But, you know, with a week of preparation, I can't imagine him being for sure any worse than he was yesterday. If you remember Matt Flynn back in 2010 when Aaron Rodgers suffered a concussion in Detroit, Flynn came in and didn't look good at all. Couldn't find the end zone. It was a 7-3 final. I mean, the offense just was non-existent. And then the next week, they go to New England, and Flynn throws for 250 yards, three touchdowns, and almost beats the Patriots in Foxborough. So, you know, I'm not saying Seneca Wallace is going to go out and, you know, duplicate Flynn's performance in New England a few years ago, but I do think that extra week of preparation, you know, that the full week of practice with the number one offense, I do think that will pay off. I think Mike McCarthy is a good enough coach to bring Wallace along and kind of tweak the playbook a little bit to fit his strengths. You know, obviously they're not going to be able to do everything that they did with Aaron Rodgers, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see where they go. Chris, what do you think we can expect over the next few weeks, assuming Wallace remains the starter?
Bumpy ride. You know, Philadelphia is starting to come around a little bit, so I don't think Green Bay is going to win that game next week. Going in, you know, you got Minnesota, you know, the Viking game all at Lambeau Field suddenly becomes a little more of a challenge. You know, then you have, you know, let's say Rodgers up for three games. You got the Eagles game here. You got the Giants. They're in New York, and then they're back at home against the Vikings. The Giants seem to be riding the ship. Minnesota is still a disaster, so I think that game's winnable. So, I mean, if they can come out of this, you know, 6-5, or even if they lose another one and they go 5-6, you know, they can still work with that. Detroit probably, right now without Rodgers, probably has the inside track to win the NFC North. But, you know, I said it before, and I'll stick to it, that 9-7 could win the NFC North. So even if the Packers lose the next three and Rodgers comes back on Thanksgiving, 5-6 does not have them out of it. So luckily they have that winning streak in there, kind of gave them a little bit of a padding. I mean, you don't never want to see Rodgers go down, but it's still doable. They just kind of have to tread water in the meantime.
Right, and I guess the key really is, you know, how much time does he miss? If it is only three games, you know, you'd like to think Wallace can win one, maybe two of those games, but if they do lose all three and they're at 5-6, assuming Rodgers can come back for that Thanksgiving Day showdown, then they're still not out of it. I agree with you, Chris. Prior to the injury on Monday, looking at the schedule, the Packers are going to be favored in every game on the schedule. There's not one game where they're going in as the underdog, and that includes the game at Dallas and at Detroit. In my opinion, I think the Packers would be favored in both those games if Rodgers were healthy. So once he's back, they're definitely capable of running the table. The schedule is not even close to as difficult as it looked like it was prior to the season. But I remember before the season, Jason, on one of our podcasts, said that he had a gut feeling Rodgers was going to miss some time this year. And sure enough, little freaking psychic Jason Perrone here came true. Jason, what's that about? You didn't mention that you're psychic to me before.
No, I guess I don't want to be. It's not often that you want to give away your psychic powers, but yeah, we were talking about it earlier today. I guess I should have predicted a Super Bowl victory.
Yeah,
and that's what I should have done, and that would have maybe come true, and then we could have be headed in a different direction. But no, I just, for some reason, I felt like it was possible, and it was time that, you know, the Packers maybe get some kind of a test that they haven't faced before, and, you know, here we are. And unfortunately, it comes during a time when this team was starting to really click and they looked to show a lot of promise, and they had, at least on paper, a good opportunity to make a run and rack up some more wins, maybe take a solid hold of this division, and then get ready for a playoff run as some of their other players come back. But this injury bug just continues to be the theme of this season. And, you know, my prediction aside, you know, they're going to have to overcome it. I'll also predict Aaron Rodgers will come back and he will play well, and the Packers will win some games before the season is over. So I'd like to throw that in there as well.
Yeah, and I guess not really – can't really say on the bright side, but, you know, going a few games without a quarterback or with a quarterback not named Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre, you know, going a few games in the last 20 years, that's not so bad in comparison to some of the other teams. I know that's hard to kind of wrap your head around as a Packers fan because you're so used to having, you know, the most important position in great shape with Favre and with Rodgers. But, you know, you look at the Cleveland Browns, how many quarterbacks have they had since, you know, Favre took over? It's we'll see. It is another challenge, like you said, Jason. And I don't know what your gut feeling was based on, that you thought Rodgers would go down at some point this year. Maybe that had something to do with the offensive line and the uncertainty there. Offensive line has been pretty good, but last night they lost T.J. Lang to a concussion, so Rodgers wasn't the only injury. T.J. Lang went down with a concussion. Don Barclay went to right guard. In came Marshall Newhouse. Newhouse definitely struggled. He did have a nice block on the long, you know, Eddie Lacy's like 50-yard run. I think Newhouse had a key block on that play. But, you know, moving forward, if Lang's out this week, you know, who knows? That's going to set the offensive line back again, in which case Seneca Wallace's mobility will be tested. And I really don't know what to expect this weekend against the Eagles. We'll get to that later. But right now we have a special guest on the line. We will be talking to Jason Hirschhorn. He's a writer at Acme Packing Company. So stay tuned. We'll talk to him shortly.
No Huddle Radio brings you tonight's special guest.
And now we are joined on No Huddle Radio by Jason Hirschhorn of Acme Packing Company, where Jason covers the Packers. You can follow him on Twitter at JB Hirschhorn. Hey, thanks for coming on, Jason.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. So, obviously, Jason, the big news, not only the Packers' third loss of the year against the Bears yesterday, it's the loss of Aaron Rodgers to a broken collarbone. Obviously, that's a significant loss. Anytime a team loses a starting quarterback, it's a big deal. And when it's Aaron Rodgers, it's an even bigger deal. Do you think they bring someone in, maybe Matt Flynn, or promote Scott Tolzien, or do you think they just roll with Seneca Wallace in the meantime?
Well, they're certainly not going to go with just one quarterback into the next game. I mean, if Rodgers isn't going to play, which you assume until told otherwise, they're going to bring somebody else in. Now, the reason why that's almost certainly going to be Tolzien is because less than a week ago, they had just given him a huge raise to keep him on the practice squad because the Cleveland Browns had come calling. So I don't think you give him that raise if you then intend to sign somebody else. So I feel like as it stands, expect Tolzien to be the number two quarterback against Philly next week.
Hey, Jason, it's Jason Perot. Thanks again for coming on, and thanks for all the great banter every game day on Twitter. Much appreciated.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, so, you know, all the talk and the focus from last night's loss to the Bears really seems to be surrounding Aaron Rodgers, and rightfully so. But defensively, Green Bay, they kind of seem to regress back into the 2011 and 2012 mode with some of that poor tackling, and they lack that spark that maybe we've seen the past few weeks when they've had better performances, especially in the passing game. Did you see any, I mean, what did you see and how much of it did you think was the scheme versus execution? For example, you got a 6'2 corner in Devon House. He gives up the jump ball touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey. What did you see last night in terms of what could possibly explain this regression for this defense that was kind of starting to become one of the top ranked in the league?
I think the answer is pretty simple. It's lack of pass rushers. I mean, we were talking about Aaron Rodgers missing time, but the guy who they've managed to do without up until last night was Clay Matthews and to a lesser extent Nick Ferry. And those guys are just, they're needed. Those are their best two pass rushing outside linebackers. Blake Neal has shown some ability at times, but he's better as a complimentary piece. So if you go that long without quality pass rushers, eventually you're going to put your secondary situations where they're just not going to be able to cover long enough. I think it's what you saw a lot of last night. Now, the Bears present some extra issues because their top two wide receivers are just humongous. I mean, you don't usually get two teams or get a team that has two receivers who are that big, that fast, and have, you know, that good of, you know, adjustment in the air ability. And, you know, sometimes those guys are just going to burn you, and that's what happened last night. But what's going to make the difference is if and when they can get Clay Matthews back, when they can get Nick Perry back, and they can stop playing Mike Neal as many downs, they can bring him back as a rotation player. So I feel like that's the main difference between them being a good defense and the defense you saw last night.
Jason, you know, the Packers, the resurgent running game is one of the reasons why fans still think the Packers can salvage something out of this. You know, especially with the way Eddie Lacy's been playing and then the resurgent James Starks. Do you think the rookie and the resurgent veteran can really carry this team if Rodgers is out for an extended period of time? Is that actually possible?
Well, I don't know how long they could actually do it, but looking forward to Philly, I think that's very possible. Now, Philadelphia is a middle-of-the-pack defense in terms of stopping the run, and they're bottom of the league in terms of, you know, altogether defense. So I feel like if you can produce a better game out of Seneca Wallace, which is not impossible, we saw the same kind of improvement for Matt Flynn in 2010 when he went from going into the game with virtually no snaps to having a full week of practice. They can get a good game out of him and can focus on Eddie Lacy in the running game. I feel like they have a good chance to win this weekend. Now, I'm not saying they're going to. I'm just saying that that's the best possible scenario that's not completely realistic. So I feel like if they're able to get a better balance than they had last night after Rodgers went out, then, yes, there's a good chance that Lacy could lead them to at least a few victories while Rodgers is out, assuming that he's not out for that long.
Yeah, just to kind of follow that up, Jason, and talking about the offensive line, because obviously the Bears stacked the box. I mean, it seems like that's going to kind of be the blueprint. I know that word gets overused a lot, but they're kind of stopping the Packers, and no one's really going to fear Seneca Wallace. So what does the offensive line do, or what can the offense do to maybe, you know, try to maintain some of that balance, do you think?
Well, I think what you have to do if the offense or if the defense are putting 8-plus in the box is to run some play action, because they definitely do respect the threat of Eddie Lacy and James Starks. So if they're going to put that many guys that close to the line of scrimmage, it should give you an opportunity to get some decent routes off of play action, because there's, you know, they had James Jones coming back last night. They're not going to get Jermichael Finley coming back anytime soon since he's sunk in IR, but and at some point they're going to get Randall Cobb towards the end of the season. Now, hopefully it doesn't take that long to get Aaron Rodgers back, but that's possible. So I feel like the way you expose that is to use some play action.
Okay. And I want to give credit, obviously, to the Bears for having a game plan coming in and executing it well and doing so on the road. Josh McCown was brought in off the street a few years back. He played well enough to outscore the Packers. You know, the Bears have dealt with their share of injuries, but they're getting Jay Cutler back and eventually Lance Briggs. Are the Bears the biggest threat to take away the NFC North, or do you still think that maybe Detroit is that next team up, kind of breathing down the Packers next?
I want to say it's Detroit because right now they have more or less their full complement of weapons. I mean, they have a healthy Stafford. They have, at least now, a healthy Calvin Johnson. I feel like they probably are in the driver's seat if Rodgers is going to miss, you know, three or more games. The reason why the Bears don't necessarily have that luxury is, even though they're talking about Cutler coming back this upcoming week, I don't think that's likely. And I think they somewhat benefit, not that they didn't, you know, have a good game plan, but I think the Bears benefited running into a team that lost its, you know, starting quarterback after one drive. So had this been instead a game where Seneca Wallace was going into the week as the starter, it might not have been the same. So I feel like, based on what we know right now, Detroit might be in a better situation than Chicago.
Obviously, you know, we know Seneca Wallace obviously struggled. Is he the best option in Rodgers' absence right now? And if not, you know, who else? Obviously, Flynn, his name is out there. Certain former Packer, Brett Favre, yeah, I forgot the guy's name already. He's still available. What possibility, you know, is Wallace, is it going to be Seneca Wallace or bust, or is there someone else out there that the Packers could get?
Well, I think Seneca Wallace is the best option they have right now. The one that you'll keep hearing is Matt Flynn, and that's certainly a possibility. This is a player that has been cut twice by the Oakland Raiders and the Buffalo Bills in less than a month. So given that those were the teams that said, I'm sorry, you're not good enough for us, there's a good chance that even though he's fairly familiar with the Packers' offense, that he's just not the answer, whereas Seneca Wallace could be. Now, as for the other name you mentioned, Brett Favre, I don't see how that's a realistic option. And it's not because of anything to do with how he's alienated the Packers or anything close to that. It's just he's a 44-year-old quarterback. He hasn't played in the NFL since 2011. I just have a hard time seeing Favre being a solution for the Packers or any other team.
Yeah, we were talking about that a little bit before you came on, Jason, and I kind of agree with you. It says something, you know, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that maybe we don't know about in terms of why a player is getting released and if there isn't some sort of a health concern. So I'll agree with you on that one. But, you know, switching over to kind of the head coaching and the staff, one issue that I've had with Mike McCarthy over the years is his, you know, his inability to adjust to changes quickly. It just seems like when a player gets hurt, or a particular game plan isn't working, the backup option seems to be very haphazard and almost looks desperate. And rarely does it seem to be very effective. This has to be one of his biggest challenges as head coach of the Packers now with Aaron Rodgers being out. Can he guide this shift through the next few weeks and keep it together for a late season run?
I think he can because you've seen him do things similar to this before. Now, your point about him having trouble adjusting in-game might be valid, but at the same time, you know, losing Aaron Rodgers – you know, first drive of the game is going to be a problem for any coach in that situation. So I don't know if that's necessarily fair. It might be. I'm not qualified to say. As for going into this week, I think we're going to see some improvement, not just from the play of Seneca Wallace, but the play calling, because I feel like even if they won't admit it, they're going to have to adjust their calls for Seneca Wallace because he just doesn't have the same skill set as Aaron Rodgers. One of the big changes I hope you see is them encouraging Seneca Wallace to throw it away if the play's not there, because despite being a veteran quarterback, you've seen him multiple times just try to extend the play well past the point where he should have thrown it away, and it's cost the Packers yards. So I feel like you can make some small adjustments there, make some play-calling adjustments, and get a better result. I definitely think it's possible.
Awesome stuff, Jason. One more thing before we let you go. We like to do this with all our guests here on No Huddle Radio. It's called the No Huddle 2-Minute Drill. It's where we ask you 10 questions, some football-related. Some may not be football related. You'll have 2 minutes to answer every question. And if time runs out before you're done, you hear this sound. That would be the sound. Are you ready to go, Jason?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, question number one. If Aaron Rodgers were to miss the rest of this season, how many games can the Packers realistically win without him?
I feel like their season total would end up being about 7.
Best football movie of all time?
The Replacements.
Which Jason will have more in-game tweets by season's end, you or Perrone?
Oh, it'll be me. I mean, he may think he'll produce a lot of them, but I think that one's on me.
The 405 or 55, which has worse traffic?
Oh, I live in L.A. It's the 405.
One drive to win the game. Who's your quarterback, Bart Starr, Brett Favre, or Aaron Rodgers?
I'll take Rodgers.
One former Packer quarterback to fill in for Rodgers while he's hurt, Brett Favre or Matt Flynn?
Matt Flynn, given those options.
Name one former Packer on another team that they miss the most.
Charles Woodson.
Who's to blame more for Rodgers' injury, Shane McClellan or Bob McGinn?
I'm going to go with a third option, physics.
You're given 2 choices for your final meal, sushi or a brat. Which is it?
It's a brat.
All right, and the Packers' final record this season, and will that get him into the playoffs?
I'm going to go 10-6, and yes, playoffs.
There you go. I would agree with you. I think 10-6, and they do sneak into the playoffs as a wild card or maybe even win the division. Who knows? But that's going to do it. Thanks, Jason, for joining us tonight. Be sure to follow Jason on Twitter at JB Hirschhorn. Thanks again, Jason. Really appreciate you coming on.
Anytime, guys.
All right. That's Jason Hirschhorn of Acme Packing Company. A lot of good stuff there. Talked about Aaron Rodgers. Talked about the defense, Eddie Lacy. Number of different things, sushi, brats, you name it. We talked about it here on No Huddle Radio. Before we brought on Jason, we were kind of talking about T.J. Lang's injury, his concussion, and the effect that had on the offensive line. Some other roster moves today involving the offensive line. Derek Sherrod activated off the pup list. And, you know, he hasn't been on the active roster since suffering that broken leg in Kansas City in 2011. So it's been a while. So the offensive line's kind of getting reshuffled. We'll see, where do they go from there. Chris, what do you expect from Derek Sherrod right away? Do you think they'll put him on the field anytime soon?
I hope not. He's been out for a long time. He's real rusty. You know, you got to protect Seneca Wallace. Because I've got, as bad as I think he played, I think Scott Tolzien's much worse. I don't expect much out of him right away. I think he's going to be one that if he plays a little bit, it's going to probably be in garbage time. He's got to get his feet underneath him. They can definitely still salvage his career. I've got no doubt about that. But right now, without Rodgers, I just don't think I'm not expecting miracles out of him, but I would love to be surprised.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, Marshall Newhouse is just that wild card. You don't really know what you're getting with Newhouse. He's got a lot of starting experience, but pass protection, not his thing. By no means is he a great run blocker, but he seems like he's a decent run blocker just because of how ineffective he's been as a pass protector in recent years, just really up and down. So we'll see what goes on with the offensive line. Obviously, it's a better, more stable unit, I think, with T.J. Lang in the lineup. But T.J. Lang wasn't the only one to suffer an injury. Obviously, we talked about Rodgers a lot already. Mike Neal suffered a hand injury. Ryan Pickett went down. Andy Mwamba went down. McCarthy really hasn't given much of an update on them. I think, you know, T.J. Lang with a short week and how the NFL is so, you know, cautious with head injuries and concussions, I think it's kind of an uphill battle that Lang faces to play this week. But we'll see. JerMichael Finley was placed on the season-ending injured reserve. I think we all kind of saw this coming. He was placed on the IR along with Sam Barrington. And there's been conflicting reports. Some people suggested Tolzien had already been promoted to the 53-man roster. But from what I can gather, that hasn't happened officially yet. I think in all likelihood it probably will. Like Jason Pershorn was saying, now they gave him that bonus to stay on the practice squad because the Browns wanted to sign him. You know, I got to think Tolzien will be on the active roster as the number two this week. But we shall see. Jason, do you expect Tolzien to be promoted to the 53-man roster?
Well, from what I read a couple of hours ago, it sounds like that may have already taken place. The team hasn't announced it yet, but it sounds like that's what they're going to do, and they've made some of these other moves to take players off the roster, put them on injured reserve, to make room for him. I think, you know, the Packers tend to be a little bit creative. I always question how many of these guys towards the end of the season are actually injured or if these are more strategic moves, and I'm pointing to Sam Barrington, I guess, although he was performing well. I know he did suffer an injury, but they need another quarterback. I mean, obviously, if Seneca Wallace goes down, Aaron Rodgers is out for a couple of weeks, your emergency quarterback, according to what I heard last night on the ESPN telecast, and again, it was John Gruden, so we take it with a grain of salt, but Jordy Nelson is the team's emergency quarterback, and so you don't want that. And I've heard a lot of good things about Tolzien and his intelligence and his smarts, and those are the kind of guys that the Packers like at quarterback, those cerebral guys that can pick up an offense because, you know, the version of the West Coast, it's a little more complex with some of the reads and things that they do. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be okay with it. And after what I saw from Seneca Wallace, you know, I'm willing to look at any and all options to get on the field this weekend because, and like I said, that it's going to be important for the Packers to try to maintain as much continuity as they can between now and hopefully when Aaron Rodgers gets back.
Right. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the offense already, you know, and losing Rodgers and how Wallace came in, tried to fill his shoes, couldn't really do it when he was thrown into the fire yesterday. But I think we got to spend some time talking about the defense, too, because, you know, with Rodgers going down, that puts more pressure on the defense to be what they've been in recent weeks, which is pretty good. And last night they just weren't. Josh McCown, give him credit, McCown played better last night than Jay Cutler has ever played at Lambeau Field, and that's just a fact. So while both teams played with their backup quarterback, I don't think the two things are equal by any means, because if Rodgers played like Wallace played last night, that would have been his worst home game ever. And I'm not sure Cutler could have played any better than McCown did last night. Mark Trestman called a great game for sure, but McCown was on point, putting the ball where it needed to be, finding open guys in the secondary, using those big receivers on the outside. You know, just not really much the Packers could do. Casey Hayward didn't have a great game. Sam Shields didn't look like he wanted to tackle. He kind of reverted back to his old ways as far as that goes. Tremont Williams didn't have his best night. Chris, if I have to ask you if there was one thing wrong with the defense last night against the Bears, what was it?
Apparently they forgot how to tackle. And the other thing, too, is Tremont Williams is very, very quickly playing himself out of a job. He did not look good. Whatever he had in 2010 is clearly gone. But, you know, between his poor play, I mean, Brandon Marshall is a good receiver. You got to give him credit for that. But that was just awful yesterday. I mean, Tremont just got owned badly. So I think, you know, the tackling thing fell apart yesterday. And I think the team as a whole was just a little shell-shocked about what happened with Rodgers. I mean, it's one of those things where you know it's a possibility, but it still takes the wind out of you when it actually does happen. So I think the defense was a little more shell-shocked than anything. So with it's a short week, yes, but, you know, they catch the breath a little bit. And okay, once this settles in reality that they're not going to have Rodgers for a little bit, I think that'll calm the defense down, then they can get back to doing what they, you know, doing what they do best.
Right, and, you know, obviously the injury to Rodgers totally, you know, rearranged the whole makeup of the game. Coming into the game, I thought there was no way, with the way the defense is playing, there's no way Josh McCown is going to come into Lambeau Field and put up 27 points. I didn't see that happening at all. You know, even with Rodgers playing, I thought the Packers would score, you know, 31 points, something like that. If I would have known the Bears were going to score 27, you know, then I would have thought it would be a really close game, down to the wire, just a nail-biter. And, you know, once they lost Rodgers, it was turned out to be kind of a comfortable win. I know it was only a one-possession game, but the Bears controlled that game after Rodgers went down, despite Eddie Lacy's big day. But now we'll just take a quick look at Adam Cech's stock report. A few names on here we've been seeing lately. Eddie Lacy's been on there almost weekly. Really not too much more to say about Eddie Lacy. I mean, coming into the draft this year, I wasn't nuts about him. I thought his last year at Alabama had a lot to do with the offensive line and just how talented that group was up front. Definitely liked Trent Richardson a lot more as a prospect coming into last year's draft. But so far, you know, through half of his first season, Lacy is head and shoulders Alabama's best active NFL running back. And just did not see that coming. Not really much more you can say. Jason, of everyone that writes for the site, you are the biggest Crimson Tide homer slash enthusiast slash whatever else you want to call it. What more can you give me about Eddie Lacy?
Well, I've got that prideful smile on my face right now. But, yeah, I mean, he creates. And what he's learned that a lot of running backs take a year or two to figure out is that patience. He's learned to kind of let the play develop, explode through the hole. I think teams that haven't seen him before are kind of caught off guard by his burst because he's such a big guy and maybe they don't expect him to be so quick. You know, I mean, he's not an Adrian Peterson, who is. He's not even a James Starks in that department. But, you know, he does have quickness, and he does get through the hole into the second level, and all of a sudden, you know, he's dragging guys into the end zone, as we saw, you know, the week prior. So he's a great back. He's playing at a high level. He should be in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. The only thing that I look at with him is that, you know, maybe to take a look at some of the hits that he takes, because when you initiate contact as a running back, you're going to put some more wear and tear on your body. And I see him so violently slamming into the defenders to try to get that extra yard. And I'd love to see that physical play. It's something the Packers haven't had before, but you know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's, you know, there's still another 8 games to go. Packers are officially at the halfway point of their season. They don't have their bye week anymore. So week after week, he's only going to have limited time to get ready and be prepared for the following week. And what we've seen out of him, he's great. We need him. So that'd be the only thing I would say that I have some concerns about. But, you know, I definitely don't mind seeing him scamper, you know, 30, 40 yards downfield. I mean, to see a big guy like that break through and get runs like that when that's not really the reason why we have him or what is expected of him is just a huge bonus. And it's frankly the reason why the game was as close as it was last night.
Yeah, without question. And actually, right before we started the show tonight, Zach Cruz had a tweet, said, take away Eddie Lacy's concussion game, which was week two against Washington, and Lacy's averaging 97.7 rushing yards per game. Right now, Adrian Peterson is the NFL leader, averaging 88.9 yards per game. So take Lacy's concussion game. He only had one carry for 10 yards that game before he was concussed. Take that away, and he's the NFL's leading rusher, at least on a per-game basis. So definitely impressive. Eddie Lacy will continue to be an even bigger part of the offense now without Rodgers. Also on the rising category for Adam Cech's stock report, which you should be sure to check out at allgbp.com. A lot of great stuff there from Adam, as always. Also on the rising list, DJ Raji had a big day. Second week in a row where Raji's, I think, stood out, played a couple of his best games of the year. And then Brett Favre, obviously for obvious reasons, with losing Aaron Rodgers, a lot of people are talking about Matt Flynn, people talking about Brett Favre, a lot of people probably talking about Doug Peterson somewhere, who knows. Anybody who's ever taken a snap under center in the green and gold has been mentioned as a potential replacement for an injured Aaron Rodgers. Moving on to the steady category, we have Gene Starks and Tim Mastay. I think Starks is an interesting case. You know, if Duane Harris wasn't out for the year, you know, couldn't play all year, and some of the things, you know, if Jonathan Franklin maybe had a stronger training camp or, you know, some of these other things, Starks probably wouldn't be here. A lot of people wrote him off. I personally thought there was no way Starks was going to be on the roster this year, just based on how many bodies they had, a couple draft picks. But he's played Brown, another 32-yard touchdown run last night. He's been great, and as long as he's healthy, I think he's going to continue to get some carries to keep Eddie Lacy fresh. Chris, what surprised you, other than the ability to stay on the field, which is a change for James Starks, what's one thing that surprised you about Starks?
How much more of a decisive runner he's been. I mean, even if you look back at 2010, he's always kind of been one of those where he had a little bit of that case of that what they call happy feet in the backfield, where he just danced around, then make his cut and go. Now he's much more north to south. He will make his cut and he runs. He's running a lot more angry. He is really, he looks like a completely different back, to be honest with you. He's, you know, stronger. He's healthier. I'm just stunned, to be honest with you. Like you guys said, Franklin, I thought, was the end of James Starks as a Green Bay backer. But he has played very well, and he's a much more decisive runner, and I think he provides that, you know, yang to the yin of Eddie Lacy, like we kind of thought Franklin might, but lo and behold, here's James Starks, and, you know, keep it up. That's all I can say, you know, for that he might make Franklin expendable, shockingly.
Yeah, and, you know, James Starks by no means a small guy. I mean, he's built like a wide receiver, about 6'2", 218, something like that, and but he's definitely the change of pace. I mean, you mentioned Lacy, a physical runner. They like to get him outside a little bit, but he does a lot of damage between the tackles and just breaking tackles to get to the second level. When they put Starks in there, it is a completely different look. He gets upfield quicker, maybe more of a fluid athlete. I think if you put James Starks on the basketball court, he'd probably take Eddie Lacy to school, not to take anything away from Lacy because he's a damn good football player. James Starks, actually, little known fact, played high school basketball with Johnny Flynn, former Syracuse star. I thought that's kind of interesting. But, yeah, James Starks, definitely a positive this season. And then Tim Mastay, just steady. I think he's one of the most consistent punters in the league at this point, especially against the Bears. That's been a welcome addition for the Packers, trying to keep the ball away from Devin Hester, obviously. Moving on to the falling category, Dom Capers, Casey Hayward, and Seneca Wallace. We've touched on Wallace. I think, you know, can't really judge him quite yet. Didn't play well at all, but I think you got to give him a full week of preparation, see how he does after practicing with the number one offense for a full week. You know, see how he plays Sunday and then kind of form an opinion. see what you have there, and then decide if you want to go another direction. But Capers and Hayward, I think these kind of go hand in hand. I think, by all accounts, Don Capers was just out-schemed by Mark Trestman's offense. The Bears' offense used every bit of about 2 weeks they had to prepare for that game, came out with a great game plan, had open receivers all night, got the ball to Matt Forte a lot. And Casey Hayward, I think, just isn't quite up to game speed. Jason, I asked this question to Chris earlier. If there was one problem with the defense last night against the Bears, what would you say that would be?
I think the biggest issue, you know, I know that Jason Hirschhorn said the pass rush, and, you know, obviously if you're able to put pressure on the opposing quarterback, it's going to lead to other good things. But I think it was the secondary. I saw a lack of heart, a lack of effort, a lack of playmaking by guys that are capable of doing better. And that goes for Casey Hayward, missing tackles. That goes for Tremont Williams being out of place. That goes for Devon House, you know, allowing himself to be bettered in the end zone on a jump ball. Just effort is what it was. And I know Adam even alluded in his post to, he doesn't really like to blame coaches and coordinators, but after so long and after, you know, watching a single guy beat the Packers defense in game and loss after loss, you look at maybe the last, you know, several losses that this Packers team has had, there's one guy that's a culprit. And he tends to emerge early in the game, and then they don't have an answer for him. You know, look at Anquan Boldin in week one. You know, look at last year, Reggie Wayne. This, I guess yesterday you call it Josh McCown. It was like they couldn't get to him. They couldn't take him down. He made every throw. So that was the issue that I had, was the effort. And it concerned me because those guys were, you know, that was the Packers' hope to overcome the loss of Rodgers. And they really could have, I think, done better and possibly gotten this team over the hump. And they're going to have to play a lot better in these next several weeks while Rodgers is out. It's going to be up to the defense to keep teams, to win games and keep teams out of it. And a lot of that, of course, is going to come down to the secondary, especially if that pass rush is going to continue to be, you know, somewhat anemic.
Yeah, no question. The defense is definitely going to have to step up without Rodgers because the offense probably isn't going to be putting up 30-some points week in and week out. Moving on to my game balls and lame calls before we talk about this weekend's Eagles game. For game balls, I had both Lacy and Starks. They both played extremely well, kept the Packers in the game with that physical run game. Each had a touchdown. Lacy had 150 yards. Just, I mean, not much more you can say. Great, great production from the run game. We've already talked about B.J. Raji a little bit. Adam had B.J. Raji on his rising list for the stock report. And then one guy I have a game ball here. Wasn't mentioned on Adam's piece, is Jamari Lattimore. I mean, the guy, when Brad Jones was down, he stepped in, filled into the starting lineup, played extremely well, and then he's on pretty much every special teams unit. The guy plays a lot for the Packers, comes up with a blocked punt last night. He seems to just make plays whenever he's on the field. Like, if he's on defense, he's living in the opposing backfield, and then on special teams units, he's making tackles, blocking punts. A little bit of Desmond Bishop, I think, as far as just making those big splash plays. Chris, of all these guys, talking about Lacy, Starks, Raji, and Jamari Lattimore, I don't know, kind of pick one of these guys and tell me what's impressed you about them.
Eddie Lacy, really, I mean, what else can we say about him? Yeah, he's shown that he's really, and I'm going to steal a phrase from a certain former wide receiver, he really put the team on his back last night. He kept that team in that game and gave them a shot to win, despite the fact that their quarterback played like a Tim Tebow-type game. Burn, I know. But that's what's impressed me most of it, is that he's been, you know, the leadership ability, well, maybe not leadership ability would be, you know, we don't want to get that debate going again, but, you know, what he's been able to do, he runs with such hunger, and he knows he belongs, and he's showing he belongs. That's what's impressed me the most, is just he looks wise beyond his years. I mean, keep forgetting, the guy's a rookie. I mean, he's only going to get better? Oh, my God. So that's been the big thing with him. Just to touch on the other two, Lattimore, just another guy, example, you know, finally gets this chance, and he's taking advantage of it. I mean, he's just been an animal on special teams. Now, that's been good to see. And then James Starks, you know, like I said earlier, he's just running like a possessed man. He got a lease on life, second lease on life in Green Bay with Jonathan Franklin's struggles. So he's you know, that's, like I said before, it just, he seems like a reborn man. He's such a better runner. But Lacy's the one that's really been the most encouraging to watch for obvious reasons.
Oh, yeah. I think Lacy for sure. Definitely probably the biggest positive on the team overall. Definitely kept the Packers in the game yesterday. And, you know, last several weeks he's just been incredible, really. Packers haven't had a running back like him as far as I can remember, to be honest. Even Amon Green didn't run the same way that Eddie Lacy runs. He's just rarely does he go down on first contact. Just really no complaints about Eddie Lacy. But moving on to the lame calls, obviously we've talked ad nauseum about the injury to Aaron Rodgers, so we won't touch on that anymore. We'll try to move past that, as the Packers will. I have the defense, the entire defense. I think it's a lame call here. You know, I've been really pumping up the Dom Capers love the last few weeks because the defense has played extremely well despite being shorthanded, especially in the front seven. But they just got out-schemed last night. It wasn't a great game for the defense. And if there's one player that I was kind of disappointed in on defense, it is Sam Shields. And I know Adam had Casey Hayward on his falling list in the falling category. I think Hayward's kind of still getting it up to game speed. He's not playing quite as many snaps right now as he played, you know, at the end of last year. Still kind of getting into game action and that kind of thing. Shields, on the other hand, you know, he played great against A.J. Green, held Torrey Smith to one catch. He's really the only corner in football this year that's kind of shut down Josh Gordon, and I think Devon House actually, you know, played against Gordon a lot in that Cleveland game. But Shields just, he's taken some steps forward with his tackling. But last night, he really reverted back to his old ways, wouldn't come up and make a hit at the line of scrimmage. Just, I think, safe to say that was Shields' worst game of the season. Jason, what stands out to you on this lame calls list?
Well, the defense as a whole would be the one thing that stands out to me. Shields, you know, he didn't have a great game. He did have the one pass breakup deep on the Brandon Marshall throw, and he's good for one of those a game. He's got the speed and ability to stay with these receivers, and that's why he's on the field. You know, I thought the defense as a whole just really lacked a leader. They lacked a playmaker, somebody who's going to step up and say, hey, we need to do better. When you've got guys like Ryan Pickett, A.J. Hawk, Morgan Burnett, you know, Tremont Williams on the field, guys that have been with this team for a while and have seen what it takes to win a championship, you know, it was really disappointing to see nobody come through and do anything last night at a time when they needed them the most. So that's really what stood out to me. You know, I was just thinking as you were talking too, I didn't see any or hear any of Mike Daniels. And Mike Daniels has been such a huge, you know, contributor over the past couple weeks. I'd be interested to see how many snaps he played and how he graded out, because, you know, he's been so disruptive. I don't know if Chicago just took him out of the game plan or if he wasn't part of it. But, you know, they just we didn't see any of the stuff we've become used to seeing over the past few weeks. And I know that this Bears offense is maybe a little more formidable than the Vikings and the Cleveland Browns. But, you know, players make plays. And that's just something that was lacking last night. And that's what stood out to me. It was just the defense as a whole.
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely safe to say the defense as a whole, quite disappointing, especially on that last drive when the Packers needed a stop just time and time again, couldn't get it, just couldn't seem to get off the field. Again, you got to give Mark Trestman a great deal of credit. He called a great game, and Josh McCown, once again, played better last night at Lambeau Field than Jay Cutler has ever played at Lambeau Field, and frankly, that's not even really a debate. Statistically, that's the case. But moving on, as the Packers will do, moving on to Week 10, they have the Philadelphia Eagles coming to Green Bay this week. Seneca Wallace will start, unless Aaron Rodgers' collarbone miraculously heals in a matter of days. T.J. Lang may be out, so maybe they go with Barclay at right guard. We'll see. I know Clay Matthews. Mike McCarthy said Matthews will try to practice this week with the club cast. Not sure if he'll be ready to play this weekend. Nick Perry, the other outside linebacker, also still a question mark. This is a really interesting game. Even if Rodgers were playing, I kind of expected this to be potentially a shootout. I think it's weird. I like Nick Foles a lot more as the Eagles quarterback than Michael Vick. I'm just not a big fan at this point of his career. Having said that, for whatever reason, I would be, you know, as far as the Packers' defense and matchups, I like Nick Foles starting for the Eagles a little more than I would, you know, Michael Vick. I just think Vick has the potential with that speed to kind of expose the Packers. They can get creative and do a little read option stuff here and there. It's just one more thing to worry about. I think the Packers' defense kind of excels against pocket quarterbacks, which is what Nick Foles is. But I don't know. I mean, defensively, I think the Eagles are definitely capable of putting up points. They're capable of putting up more points than the Packers are, I think, this weekend with Seneca Wallace, despite the fact that Philadelphia's defense is nowhere near the top of the league. Offensively for the Packers, can they run the ball against eight-man fronts? You know, that remains to be seen. Who knows? Chris, I'll start with you, and we'll focus on when the Packers have the ball. So what will you be watching this weekend when Green Bay is on offense?
To see what Seneca Wallace does with his decision-making. Saw a couple of ground balls on Monday. So I'm looking forward to his decision-making and seeing what that week of practice did. We all know Mike McCarthy can coach up a quarterback, Graham Harrell notwithstanding, or Vince Young. But, you know, McCarthy can get – Seneca Wallace is a veteran. He's suitable, or so we think. He's won games in the league before, so I'm looking to his decision-making. And two, if Lang is out, Barkley and Newhouse on the field at the same time, good God. That's the other thing is will they provide Wallace protection, enough protection for him to get some confidence and then, you know, let him set up shop and do what he has to do. That's what I'm looking for is, you know, got Barkley and Newhouse up to the challenge, and two, has Wallace's decision-making improved with, you know, a week, albeit a short week of practice under his belt.
Absolutely. Definitely a bunch of question marks with Seneca Wallace making his first start as a Packer this week. I do think he's capable of putting up points. Again, I think he will be, you know, at least a little better than he was yesterday against the Bears, just based on that full week of preparation, practicing with the starting offense and things like that. Jason, when the Packers are on defense, you know, they really struggled against Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey. Eagles offense looks very different than the Bears offense in the respect that DeSean Jackson is a short, slight, albeit lightning-fast receiver, having a big year in Chip Kelly's new offense. Riley Cooper had 3 touchdowns last week in Oakland. Nick Foles tied an NFL record with 7 touchdowns against the Oakland Raiders. And then you got LeSean McCoy, who, when he's healthy, I don't think there's a more entertaining running back to watch in the league. I think he's right there with Adrian Peterson. Very different players, but LeSean McCoy is like the human joystick. The guy can cut on a dime, and I'm not sure if that's still his Twitter handle, but I know it used to be cut on dime 25 or something like that. Whatever. LeSean McCoy, tough matchup. DeSean Jackson, tough matchup. What are you going to be watching, Jason, when the Packers are on defense this week against the Eagles?
I wouldn't put Riley Cooper in the same category as a compliment to DeSean Jackson like Alshon Jeffrey has become this year. I mean, he's really turned the corner and was a huge problem, no pun intended, for the Packers last night. I don't think that Cooper is going to present that same challenge, which is probably a good thing because I think that LeSean McCoy probably has a little bit more elusive ability than does a Matt Forte, and so Green Bay is going to have to be very sound in containing McCoy, and that being in their tackling and their fundamentals. So that's what they'll have to do. I mean, it's a dual threat. You can't take your eyes off the pass. You know, while Nick Foles did throw 7 touchdown passes last week, I would be shocked if, you know, even 11 of myself were on the field if he was able to still throw 7 touchdown passes in a game. So, but again, here's another backup quarterback who's coming into Lambeau Field, and, you know, are we going to see a repeat of what we saw last night? I sure hope not. I mean, I was very frustrated watching Seneca Wallace and thought to myself, and what's going to become of this team? And I guess it's a good thing that, you know, we took a day in between the game and doing this podcast because it might have been a little bit different for me had we done this right after the game. But defensively, obviously, you know, it goes without saying. Stop the run, stop the pass, you know, then you stop everything. But with DeSean Jackson to focus on, Brent Celek really hasn't been too overly dangerous this year as a tight end. The Packers tend to make guys that are average look good, you know, when they shouldn't. And hopefully that doesn't happen. Celek could be one of those guys. I think after getting punked so bad last night, I think this defense is going to come out charged up and probably a little angry. And they're at home. They got to hold turf. They need to defend the turf. You know, they haven't lost a game at home since the opener last year, and it's just not what the Packers do. They just don't lose games at Lambeau Field. So I think you're going to see the defense take this one a little personal, and I expect to see much improved play this week.
Well, that would be great news for the Packers, obviously, if they're able to get back on the winning win streak here without Aaron Rodgers. It's going to be a little struggle. Now we'll just get into our game predictions real quick before we sign off. It's the Eagles at the Packers this weekend at Lambeau Field. It's a noon kickoff. I really don't feel strongly either way about this game. I'm not completely sure what to expect. As of right now, though, I have the Packers winning this game. I think it'll be very close. The defense, Jason, you mentioned the defense having to pick up the slack a little bit. They're going to have to play better, slow down this fast-paced Eagles offense. I think they do that. I think Matthews does play. I don't know if he'll play a lot. I think they may kind of ease him into the rotation and things like that. Right now I have Packers 20, Eagles 16, but don't be surprised if you see that prediction changed when the post submits, because I don't feel very strongly about that. I have to think on this one a little longer, so I apologize for my lack of definitive prediction here. Chris, what's your prediction for this weekend?
I am going to go with Philly 28, Green Bay 14, based on two facts before everybody starts ripping me a new one. First of all is the Philadelphia Eagles are on a much different offense than what the Packers are used to. Dom Capers showed what he can do when facing an unusual offense like he did against the San Francisco 49ers in the playoffs last year. The defense basically crapped the bed. Until I see otherwise, they did good. You know, they did fine against San Francisco in week one, despite the loss. Kaepernick, you know, went crazy, with his arm. But that's a lot more traditional than the read option nonsense they were running before in the playoffs. So that's one thing. Two is Seneca Wallace. I just don't have much. They're going to have to move the ball through the air at some point. They're going to have to. I mean, Philadelphia, like we talked about, has a mediocre rush defense, but I still don't trust him not to make that boneheaded decision. You know, once we get this full game under the belt, you know, I'll be able to make more judgment on Wallace. But right now, I just have to go off the Bear game, and I've got very little confidence in him or the defense, seeing an unusual offense like with what Chip Kelly runs.
All right, so as of right now, I'm on the Packers. Chris sounds like he's definitely on the Eagles. Jason, who do you have this weekend?
I'm seeing a score of 20-13, and right now I'm kind of leaning towards the Eagles. I don't see any way that these Packers score 20 points. If they do, they probably get a defensive touchdown or maybe on special teams. The offense just didn't show me enough to think that they can't put up that many points, and it's not a lot, but, you know, I want to think realistically. And while the Packers should be able to run on the Eagles, I still don't think that I think Lacy will have as good as yards and, you know, obviously barring injury. I think Lacy and Starks will be a good complement there, and they might still have a great day and get their yards, but I don't know that they're going to score any more than two rushing touchdowns at the most. You know, that may be the only chance the Packers have to get in the end zone if Wallace can't get the ball downfield. I mean, I don't know what the stats were, but I think he only converted one or two first downs via the air last night, and he had so much trouble throwing it. So I just want to be realistic, and I've got it more of a low-scoring contest, but kind of like you, Marcus, I don't really have a strong feeling one way or the other, so that could change by the time the predictions post comes out right now, but, you know, I'm one of those people that, you know, kind of needs to see it before I can really believe it, and that's why, you know, when we did our schedule look before the season, I looked at that Giants game, and I said, I think the Packers can beat the Giants at any time, but until I see them do it, because they've lost, you know, a couple times in a row, I'm going to lean more towards the Giants, because it's just that monkey they can't get off their back. It's like that hill they need to climb over and I want to see it happen before I can really totally get on board. So that's what I've got, 2013 Eagles.
Yeah, and unfortunately for the Packers, you know, the Eagles defense, not one of the better units in the league, but definitely a lot better against the run than they are against the pass. And with Seneca Wallace at quarterback, I think their secondary may look a little better than it really is. And if they're able to shut down Eddie Lacy, then, yeah, Jason, I think you're right. I think the Packers would struggle to score 20 points, even though they did this last week against the Bears. 3 of those points were on an Aaron Rodgers-led drive, obviously. But 17 points against the Bears. I think the Bears and the Eagles are somewhat comparable as far as defenses. But we shall see. It's going to be really interesting. Again, I don't feel really strongly either way. I think it's a toss-up. With Aaron Rodgers, I think it's a 17-20-point game, a comfortable win at home at Lambeau Field. Now, again, I think it's heads or tails, you call it. It's a coin flip. We shall see what happens this weekend. But that is going to do it for our show. Thanks to everyone for listening. Be sure to check out allgbp.com for your latest Packers news, opinions, and analysis, as well as PackersTalk.com. This podcast was brought to you by Mayfield Sports Marketing. Thanks again for listening. For Jason Perrone and Chris Burke, I'm Marcus Eversall. Have a good one, everybody.
This segment brought to you by Jersey Owls, allgreenbaypackers.com.
This Green Bay Packers podcast is brought to you by Mayfield Sports Marketing, our official sports marketing agent for player appearances. To book a Packers player for your next event, go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.